So Alan's not here today. He's getting an award or something like that for his volunteer work at eHealth. So we do need to appoint a chair pro tem for today's meeting that, like we did at the last meeting. So if anybody wants to volunteer.
I'll volunteer.
Do you want me to let them know that what I'm hoping the chair will do tonight before they...
I think you guys have to vote on that, so.
So
make the motion.
So moved. Seconded.
Yay.
Aye. Yay.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So first thing, roll call. Everybody's here. Here. And then the next thing is the approval of the minutes.
To approve the February 8th meeting minutes as presented.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Minutes are approved. All right, so next up is updates.
Election of the chair
and vice chair. Okay.
So I did get an email from Alan. I asked him if he wanted to continue on as chair, and he said that he's willing to do what the committee needs, and he will be, you know, snowbirding half of the year, and so whoever is vice chair will effectively be chair for half of the year if he does remain as the chair. But he said he's willing to do whatever our committee needs. So if you guys want somebody that's chair the whole year, he's more than happy to be in a different role or whatever works.
Well, I'm happy to be the vice chair if you want me. I'll do it. I'm happy to have him be the chair. I can speak on his behalf without his consent.
Well, I would nominate Alan as chair and Steve as vice chair.
I second that.
Do we need to vote on them separately, or can we?
I don't know. I think you can. There's nothing in the bylaws that. Yeah, you could do
that. They have a single ticket, so
yeah.
You guys can put on the ticket.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Yeah.
I'm used to doing this stuff. All right, updates. Clark County Public Health, Solid Waste Program.
All right, so I've got some. You want to jump into these? Okay, so I got a few updates from our program staff. We're missing a few. We're waiting for a text back from Sarah, who does our green business stuff, for a little bit more info, but I don't know if we'll hear from her. But start with Master Composter Recycler Program, which you're all familiar with. Pete Dubois manages that. They've recently graduated 33 new volunteers for Master Composter Master Recycler Program, which was the largest class in this program's history. Their 10-week training wrapped up on March 28th. Additionally, probably program-wide, this is more of a program-wide thing, but the Green Gala Award and Recognition event happened at Tiggins, I think right after our last Slack meeting. And even in the midst of, I would say there were around 150 attendees, even in the midst of the snow and the ice and the cold that was going on. We were on the verge of rescheduling. It was an 11th-hour decision to keep it going, so people braved the ice and the cold to come and attend. And for MCR, they awarded a Master Composter Recycler. They awarded a Green School, a Green Business, as well as a community member that did... that provided a significant amount of volunteer work and time. I don't think I have the list of all of them, but it's probably something we can provide to you if you're interested. Or did anybody attend?
Well, Allie was there. She won the Green Apple.
Allie won the Green Apple, yes, yeah. At Canvas High School. Yes. That's right. So there was also a green school. So, and then the MCR Superstar was nominated for most amount of volunteer hours and most time given back. Coming up, they're going to be doing tabling at the farmers markets, so second Saturday of the month, April through October. They continue with their monthly volunteer meetings, home and garden idea fair, a small acreage expo. They're also working on working with some of the with our staff and City of Vancouver staff to look at how the master composter volunteer time can be spent to increase recycling and decrease contamination at multifamily properties. So I think that they've moved along on developing a plan. I haven't been to those meetings, but they're looking at seeing what that volunteer time. I think they got 10 volunteers signed up to do knock and talks and outreach to properties and get the word out about contamination. So that'll be a new training that they went through, and they should be starting that pretty soon. For green schools, Michelle provided me, so Michelle Pacinich's program, for which Ali won the Green Apple Award at the event. On February 8th, they had an educator session with Washington Green Schools, who is our partner in the school systems for helping schools attain certain sustainability thing or sustainability goals with a broad array of things, but we spend our time helping them with waste reduction. A couple of those, so they had an educator session where teachers and staff come and get trained and learn about the program. And Lacamas Heights, Fruit Valley, Camas High School, Alkyd Middle School, and York Elementary were all received various certification levels for a variety of things. But for waste and recycling, I think Lacamas Heights and Camas High School were both certified or recertified for those disciplines. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it in a bit, but we're working with Michelle and the Department of Ecology on looking at milk dispensers in a couple of schools around the county just to reduce waste, but also get more of that energy, the inherent energy in milk to get it consumed, but also reduce waste. So it's a public health and solid waste encapsulated type of a project that we're looking at doing. They've started monthly newsletters. They're working on next generation science standards and Common Core. So I don't know if you guys are familiar, but the state has standards on what certain goals and certain topics and certain targets that teachers have to meet when developing science curriculum. So Kaylee, one of our new hires, and Ellen with Waste Connections are working on lessons that teachers can do to help discuss and talk about solid waste and reduction, recycling, and natural resource use, but also still meet the statewide curriculum requirements. And then continuing to provide share tables, just more opportunities in schools to get food to the people that need to eat it before it goes to composting or to recycling. And then with our residential program, the Green Gala was a huge part, but right now we're in full planning mode for the Recycled Arts Festival, which is coming up on, there's some flyers over there, but that is coming up on June 23rd and 24th, so they're in full-fledged planning mode for that, as well as the Natural Garden Tour that's coming up. Do we have that?
We do.
I don't have that. We'll get that information.
It's usually in July.
And then there also, we have our, I won't go into detail, but we had a Board of Ethics hearing on whether or not our author talks were, or if we were providing unfair opportunities for people to profit from a county supported. Anyways, the good news is our author talks are continuing. And the last one, I don't know if anybody attended, was about Bigfoot, and the gentleman used Bigfoot as a mechanism to introduce the topic of environmental science and human role in the environment. And this next topic, I'm actually very excited about, but that's my personal interest, is Green Burial. So it's a woman that's written a book about, disposing is not the word, but handling human bodies, dead humans, in a way that is
human remains.
Pardon?
Human remains.
Safe, yeah. Dead human bodies. in a way that, in a natural return to the environment, retain energy, circle of lifetime of approach. So I'm sure there's a more sensitive way to have said that, but that's what she's talking about, basically burying people in a way that returns their energy and resources back to the environment. So that one is coming up on May 26th. I also forgot, I'm going to pass around these, some more updates on green cleaning and HHW education series that...
I think that's a waste reduction, not HHW.
Oh, it says household waste reduction. Oh, household waste reduction.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just saw household.
They're bringing a speaker to come talk about how to reduce your waste and, you know, go to this one can a month. It'll be, it's a new workshop, but pretty exciting.
Thank you for kids. I just saw household and waste in the Zoom. And then additionally, there's the Volunteers in Action newsletter, which I'll leave behind. And I don't know if any of you get electronically, but it summarizes a lot of the things that we have going on. And I think we talked a little bit about Kaylee. She hasn't come to a SWAC meeting yet. We hired her prior to the last meeting. I don't know if I updated you or not, but she's a program tech, Kaylee McLaughlin-Burton. She came from Columbia Springs and is working as a program tech with both Michelle in Green Schools and Pete in Master Composter Recycler Program. So she's a newer staff member that I don't know. I need to have her come to one of these so you, everybody can meet her. But and then we haven't heard back from Sarah yet.
No.
So.
But they usually every month she has the morning one that you guys are familiar with. So if you're on her listserv, you'll get an email about it. The last one was at Mighty Bowl and it was pretty good attendance. It was pretty exciting to see what they're doing over there. They've been one of our first great businesses and first great food truck. That was a great business. So.
And free smoothies and coffee.
Yeah, that was great.
and
avocado toast.
Yeah. A few other program updates. So Jill Krumloff, who had previously been a program tech working for both Green Business and Green Neighbors, applied for and was offered and successfully applied for and was offered and has moved into the role of Environmental Outreach Specialist for Green Neighbors. So that's the position that Sally Fisher previously held, who is now in a program coordinator role. So Jill has been in that position for about a month and a half, 2 months, and has just dove right into Recycled Arts Fest planning, and Sally is still acting as a mentor, facilitating through that process for her. Additionally, a lot of you probably remember Jana Williams, who took notes and helped us set up this meeting, accepted a job with Pierce County up in Tacoma and left about 2 months ago as well. So Jana is no longer with us, and she's with us. She's not one of those other things I was talking about. She is just up in Pierce County where she went up to go spend time with a family and her new or soon-to-be new grandbaby. So just an opportunity for her to be closer to family and work someplace else. So she is with Pierce County. And currently we have somebody named Julie who is temporarily fulfilling Jana's role. And at some point we'll work as a team to fill some of these vacancies and figure out what the team needs. So we're operating a little bit behind capacity right now, but have kind of filled some of those needs. I don't have any other, I think operationally we'll talk a lot about some of the stuff we're going to be working on. Mike's got some projects that he's going to talk a little bit about tonight and then some other projects that we have going on.
Yeah, just a few other things. So we had a Cover Your Load campaign for the month of April. So we put out electronic reader boards outside Central Transfer Station and then one kind of on the way to West Ham. And they just reminded folks about covering your load. It's the law, don't litter. And we also developed new flyers that were handed out at the transfer station. And prior to the campaign, and we've done some social media posts if you want to. And prior to this campaign, we found a control, and we found that about 30% of the loads coming in are unsecured in some way, determined by the scaled house attendants. And so we hope right now, it's been a conclusion of the campaign, so now they're taking a week to figure out if our campaign had any impact on the number of loads coming in. And this is funded through a grant through Ecology, so we have to demonstrate that, you know, we're using our money and it's causing a positive effect. So that's how we're measuring it. And hopefully, you know, some changes have happened. You know. And it's, now that we know how many bloods are coming in uncovered, it's also, I think, kind of heightened our need to do something to address it. There was also a medication take-back event. Did you talk about that?
I did not talk about a medication take-back event.
So there's a medication take-back event. Was that last weekend? And I have the numbers here if you're interested. But there were about 1,400 participants with about 5,800 pounds of waste, including sharks. So I'll pass that along. We also did, for those of you who are familiar with the residue sorts, so where we're getting a sample of the stuff that is contamination in recycling bins or stuff that just didn't make it through the recycling process. All of that's kind of lumped together at the end of the sorting process. And so we are characterizing that to figure out what is showing up in that, you know, what percent is by weight is plastic bags or things that shouldn't be in there. And then also we can compare that to the total and figure out our contamination rate in the county, figure out how poorly or good our residents are doing with recycling, right? So we did one for single family, and the multifamily one is this Sunday. So hopefully in a couple months we'll have a report that I can share with you. I know the Recycled Arts Festival won awards again. I didn't see, they won awards last year and they won awards again this year.
They won from the Festivals and Events Association, Washington Festivals and Events Association. Yeah. They won best t-shirt, best website for RAF, and there was a, I'm sorry, I should know this, but they won runner-up for a third category as well. And Sally went up to accept those awards. Mm-hmm. And then also at that, they had a conference, and the other thing that she attended there was event safety and specifically relating to violence at events. So Sally's working this year on increasing the, you know, looking at how we plan and prepare for event safety for all the people that are attending. A lot of the things that have been happening around the world, that conversation is getting a little bit more serious about people and public events and large crowds and how we kind of help facilitate a safe environment for people. So in addition to winning awards, she went up there and provided some, or got some education on how to improve our events from that standpoint too. So
The Wastebusters Challenge also concluded. I think it was about 150 or so people participated in that. It's a pretty fun challenge. You guys might be familiar with how we are transitioning kind of away from the Recycling Day events. And so we just were the only two cities that wanted to put on events this year were the town of Yapple and Ridgefield. So we had almost 100 participants at Yapple. And we also added on household hazardous waste at that event and brought it back. The last 2 years there wasn't hazardous waste there. And there are about 36 participants in the hazardous waste, but they brought nearly 5,000 pounds of hazardous waste. So, and then in addition to that, 25 Freon units for 3,300 additional pounds. Scrap metal was most popular, and we also collected electronics, the full suite we always have offered in the past.
Can I say, there was a conversation, I'm in a group, I don't do Facebook, but I am in this group for La Center, and they were mentioning that they were wondering when the next recycle event was, and there was a lot of kind of like comments grumbling that it wasn't happening.
From where?
From the community.
Which community? I'm
La Center.
La Center, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I know La Center City Council didn't want to do it because of costs. They said they couldn't. Their budget issues.
Yeah, so what we try to tell people is that we've improved 6 facility locations, so people can travel to locations anytime that's convenient for them now, instead of having to go and or having to wait a whole year for an event to come around.
But they like
that. I know.
It's a community event.
The center, it wasn't. Last year, had very poor participation. And so it was one of the...
I'm just teasing.
I know. Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and when we calculated it, it's just the ROI, and yeah, it just didn't pencil out. But for, especially, like, I've never had been to the Ridgefield event, the one they put on, and that, like, everyone shows up. Like, the mayor's there, former mayor's there, like, it's like...
Where do they hold them at?
By Par Lumber, and where the new wildlife, the wildlife location, that long street. And so all the trucks were just lined up, and it was like people just went in, turned around, came back out. It was pretty smooth operation. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah.
And they had just their Boy Scouts just running everywhere and, like, you know, getting, helping people unload stuff. And if people accidentally missed, like, a station and got too far, they would take it out, and then a Boy Scout would run it back to the other station where they should have dropped it off. And so that's like a big, like, you know, and if there's other cities that put on, you know, events like that where the whole community is just really involved, I mean, we'd be more than happy to come back and help with that. And they had over, they had like about 250 participants at that one. And scrap metal, again, being the most popular station, but electronics were high up there as well. Those were really cool. And we didn't bring hazardous waste back to that one. I found through some research that I think it's 10 miles. You don't want someone to travel more than 10 miles to reach a household hazardous waste facility. And so with Yakult's location, that's one reason we decided to bring hazardous waste back to there for best practices. I think that's everything.
Do we want to take a quick time out to do introductions since we've got...
Yeah.
We'll hijack Melissa's spot real quick. Can you wait a few minutes?
Yeah.
Are you okay with that? Just want to make sure she's got some folks. No, that's fine. I think it was natural to go in, and now that Simone's here eating her food, we'll make her talk and introduce herself now that she's
speaking.
Did anybody tell Simone that we voted her the chair?
Oh.
Yeah, she should have been here.
It's time for a woman.
Yeah. That's right.
Did
we get a woman?
No, it's giving you hard time because you're late.
I sent a message that said I was in a meeting. I could not. The customer would not.
Well, the best time to vote somebody to be in charge is when they're not here.
Okay.
They can't say no.
Oh, I'm telling you, we got to, you know, make a democracy. So.
Do you want to update her on what we did?
Vice chair.
Elected chair pro tem. Chair pro tem.
We elected Alan to continue as the chair. I was going to head on the vice chair. But if you would like to assume any of the roles, we're certainly willing to negotiate.
Maybe next time we'll consider, some women.
I'm happy to have somebody else do it. I'm happy to volunteer. I'm happy
it
to
does, it. Yeah. I'm just...
All right.
Thank you for serving, actually. Seriously.
No problem.
You want to start?
Derek Grant with Waste Connections.
And you have, like, what is your role?
So I'm the district manager for Waste Connections, so I run all of our operations in Clark County, including collections, the transfer station system, and Triangle Resources, which is a wood grinding company out on campus.
And on the SWAT, he's our solid waste industry spot filler,
right.
Chair filler.
Did we?
Yeah.
Jennifer Hawks Conright. I am with the Clark County Association of Realtors, and I work a lot with businesses within Clark County, especially ones that do a lot of work with the real estate industry. I'm the business representative.
And I like your name tag. Now I won't have a problem remembering that. So I'm Simone Auger, and I am representing small towns and cities. And I'm a lighting specialist with the Energy Trust of Oregon Commercial Industrial Lighting Program. But I live in Clark County.
And this is great for me because I've been saying auger in my head since I started. So I'm really glad that now I have that to store away. I've never said that out loud, but I've said it.
I remember your name, Dutton.
Thank you. I'm
good. You're going to find bubbles in your recycle.
Thank you.
My name is Rem Wilson. I represent Southeast Clark County, and I'm a recently retired mechanical engineer. That's it right now.
I'm Rich McConaughey. I'm the City of Vancouver representative, and so my day job is I work with the city as the environmental resource manager. That includes the solid waste programs and the Water Resource Education Center and the Urban Forestry Program.
I'm Chris Prother. I'm the Southwest Washington representative. My day job is a laboratory technician for Legacy now. And I appreciate being here.
I'm Steve Willis. I represent Northern Clark County. And I've got 4 years of working for the city of San Jose as the deputy director for integrated waste management. So that's my background.
And then I'm Travis. You met Kim and I from Clark County, and then you met Mike, and then you'll meet Melissa here in a little bit. Well, thank you. One last thing I wanted to cover on solid waste program updates is kind of a little bit about what I'm hoping to ask the chair to do later, but also ask of everybody here, is we have a lot of projects that are coming up, and I would like to... one of the things we'll talk about is the legislation that came up and the question about SWAC and how do we involve, how does SWAC engage with the council and then with statewide legislation that's going on and how do we support or oppose. So we'll touch on that a little bit more, but we'll have some other projects that are coming up. And we don't need to talk about this right now. But one of the things I'm going to ask is for members of SWAC to be just providing opportunities or requesting that members of SWAC individually participate in the development of some of these projects, and specifically two that are coming up in addition to SWAC working on legislation, in which I would like later the... I'm going to ask the chair to facilitate that discussion and find some priorities and see if somebody wants to take the lead or take charge on being the SWAC liaison, and we'll talk about that process. But two of the other projects that are coming up, one that you'll hear about tonight is the regional system study, which is basically taking a look at the economics, the structure of the entirety of our system, and helping facilitate the best system we can have to take care of our program for about 20 years or longer. And we're in the process, Mike will give an update, but we're in the process of developing an RFP and wanted to check in with SWAC. Presently, Rich McConaughey is part of that RFP development team, and then will subsequently be part of the vendor selection team, or part of that vendor selection process, and I don't know if we can talk, we can probably talk about this when we get to that, but to see if SWAC is, or if all the members are comfortable with Rich sort of serving a dual function in his day job role, but potentially reporting back to SWAC on his involvement in that select, that vendor selection process, or if somebody else at the table is really chomping at the bit to be part of the vendor selection process. And taking on a little bit more responsibility on SWAC. The other project that will be probably further out in the future, but I want people to be aware of so they don't take the first thing that comes along and then not get to do the other thing that sounds way better. But Kim and Mike and I will be facilitating or going through our recycling contract RFP. And so that SWAC member will be part of the team developing the RFP and what we're looking for in that RFP, but then also being part of that selection process, that vendor selection process. And my hope is that this increases engagement with SWAC and that we, you know, really utilize the expertise and the feedback and the stakeholders at the table so that it's more real-time involvement with the programs that we have going on and more active conversation. So unless anybody's opposed to not being involved at all, I don't think we need to make any selections right now. And when we get to the regional system study, perhaps as the chair, you can facilitate a discussion about, you know, Rich being in that role or if somebody else really feels like there should be an additional SWAC member. And then also talking a little bit about that legislation, knowing that the recycling contract RFP is coming up in the future. So, and that if this pattern works, and if this works, I would like to continue to have SWAC subcommittees or SWAC members participate in greater detail in some of the projects that they really want to be involved. Any questions about that? Or okay, well, I don't know what you can do.
I'm fine with being on the last one.
Yeah, I bet you. Okay, so that ends my updates. I'm sorry, that was the last thing. I just wanted to share and make sure I let you know what I'm hoping for you to do later.
Right, I have a couple of quick
ones.
Okay. I'll step out of the back of
the
bus. So I'm staying away from her. She's coming down. She's coming down. Anyway, so I just wanted to give you a heads up that the Leichhardt Master Plan is about ready to be approved. And how this works is that we receive the draft as the applicants go through it, make sure that all the comments and all the pieces are there in the final staff report. Community Development has recommended approving it. That's not formalized until the interim director actually signs off on it, but that could happen as early as the end of next week. And then there is a 14-day appeal period where either I believe the SEPA and or the approval can be appealed. And any of the parties of record, that's anyone who had a comment about the master plan during the SEPA or submitted comments that during meetings also has the opportunity to appeal. So it's kind of a limited pool at that point, but it still could be appealed, which would kick it over to the hearings examiner and kind of kick it out. I don't know what that schedule looks like. I would suspect at least 3 months. But we're getting close after 4 years, and so once that process is done, then the county will start a long road to actually surplus those 30 acres for development. And that process, when I say a long road, it typically takes 6 months, 8 months to a year. It just depends on how aggressive the board wants to be with surplusing property. So that's one update. And Rich, Tanya, and I, and Kim are on a disaster debris committee that is in the process of updating and filling in all the blanks on the disaster debris plan that Rich, Tanya, and Anita, the former manager here, had worked on years ago, and it lacked certain elements to get formal approval by the Corps. And we're filling in all those blanks. We hired a consultant to do that. And just recently, we identified sites within the city of Vancouver, Battleground, all the small cities. And then the county identified 3 to 4 sites potentially be disaster debris processing sites. So that plan process is moving along. What does that look like for completion sometime in the summer?
I think like July, something like that.
It'll move pretty fast at a certain point because they do the Tetra Tech, the company who does this, is a very large company, and they do this all over the country. And so they should put it together pretty quickly. And at some point, these guys, they've been involved already, but they'll have their opportunity to, you know, have further involvement. And at the end of all that, we're actually looking for additional grant funding to hold a formal tabletop training. So that's the other thing that's kind of going on behind the scenes that we're doing. And I just wanted to let you know that that was happening. So that's the end of my update.
Any questions on either one of those?
For your sake, no, go ahead, sorry.
The disaster debris, you said?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting because we've seen, you know, the fallout from environmental, you know, weather-related incidents and so on. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely, like Harvey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hurricane
like
Harvey.
Like we saw that as people were throwing stuff out in the street and it needed to go somewhere, and they had staging areas, and the fires in California.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly the scenario that we're looking at. And mm-hmm. part of this process is we will go out and, for RFP with their help for pre-staged contractors, the guys that, you know, mosquito fleas that follow these storms all over the country.
Oh, okay.
They're primarily out of the southeast, but there'd be two types of contracts. One are the guys with the grappling trucks that go down in those streets to pick up those piles.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is at the sites themselves. They would be monitors and or potentially running the sites. So it's pretty complicated, but you want to get it all up front in place and approved That way you're eligible for higher reimbursements from FEMA when that time comes. And then you avoid a lot of the pitfalls that I saw in the 96 floods in Lewis County. That millions were spent thinking they would get their money back, and they didn't do it right. FEMA just said, you're on your own.
So this is the first time I've heard of this pre-planning. Has it been going on?
Yeah, we initially did this planning in 2012. Okay. Is that about right, Rich?
Even earlier than that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And we had the, I think it was a 2004 windstorm. We had a lot of wind debris, and we spent $180,000.
Was two collecting. 2004 was the ice storm.
Ice storm.
And we set up, did something similar where we set up debris sites, but it was all organics. And then we coordinated that with the small towns. That was a weird one because it didn't necessarily hit the east end. It sort of swept around and came back up and hit Battleground, Ridgefield, and then the county particularly hard. And parts of the city, Vancouver, very hard. And so the cities worked with the county to set these sites up, and then eventually the county hired Triangle to come in and grind it. And so, you know, like Rich said, I think that was a couple hundred thousand. In the greater scheme of things, that's nothing. So that's why we're planning ahead now to start that process, and we'll update you at the next meeting as to where we're at and kind of the progress on that.
Thank you.
Sorry.
You're up.
I'm a little bit sick, so I will try to talk fast so I don't cough everywhere. My name is Melissa Sutton, and I work with Clark County Public Health, and I'm with you. That's for the new. I've worked. Next month will be 15 years here with Clark County Health. So I've been around for a while in various programs. I'm an environmental health specialist. My degree is environmental science with geography background, so strong science. That's what I do. Solid waste enforcement. Very quick update. The local solid waste financial assistance grant, which I do have to substitute and not call CPG, we just had that awarded this week. So we will be filing the reports and back charging for the last two quarters of 2017 plus this one. So in that report, it will be a combination of three quarters of data, which you've all received a quarterly update, so it's really good that we did these so that we can squish them all back together very quickly. In the numbers, just kind of quick overview if you want to look at it, it's kind of detailed, but we didn't really get a lot of complaints. We aimed for 150 to resolve each year, so but how many come in is how many we try to resolve. So this quarter ended up being very low. It usually picks up in the summer. People have their doors open and want to store garbage in the bed of their truck in the summer more than they do in the winter, apparently. All the facilities were inspected. The annual reports are due. WAC requires them to be submitted by April 1st of each calendar year. So I found in years past, if I review the first quarter and then they straggle in, and sometimes I get some of them on one report and some not on the other, so I tried to document like that they came in, and some I reviewed the actually second quarter, so I tried to put those dates mostly so I can capture them next quarter. So but that detail is there. And then there's program highlights for some of the different facilities of things that are happening. This quarter, first quarter, Stericycle is probably the biggest one. They have started to recycle their latex paint at their facility. So they're mixing Washington latex paint, and they're able to recycle that. So that's really good for them. Yesterday, I received an application from North County Hardware up in Amboy. They're hoping to have an exempt solid waste facility. So they're exempt from permit but not exempt from regulation under the WAC. So I just got that yesterday. There's a 17-mile stretch of highway that's going to be repaved, and so they're taking up that asphalt. So they're hoping to take that milling from that project, stockpile it at this North County hardware store, and then sell that aggregate for property owners who can then reuse that aggregate on their own private roads or private driveways. So I consulted with Chuck Matthews at Washington State Department of Ecology. He confirmed with me that yes, this is a marketable product, which I was a little hesitant at first, but he also reassured me that the contaminants of concern from that material do bind with the minerals in the soil, so they end up water soluble, so don't contaminate the groundwater. So that was nice to have that technical expertise and knowledge, but wanted to relay that information to you. We are reading, there are some land use and planning things that will need to be resolved, so they've asked for additional detail on the application, so before we can continue the review process. Actually, Washington State Department of Ecology, while I inspect them through our grant, Washington State Department of Ecology is the one who actually grants the formal approval. And if there's any enforcement action on an exempt facility, it's up to Ecology to issue that by statute. And kind of rolling into that enforcement piece, City Bark is an exempt facility. They accept yard debris and also scrap metal at their facility. And it's in downtown Vancouver, right kind of near the mall. For those of you who don't know, they recently, in December, they had some stormwater issues that the City of Vancouver has actually cited them violations for their stormwater management at the site. The City of Vancouver elected to withdraw them from their leaf take back program this spring. I have visited the site subsequently with Derek Reckitt with Washington State Department of Ecology, and it is both my professional opinion and his professional opinion that the stormwater issues that are there at the site are not directly related to the solid waste handling activities. So it might be finance from their finished product, or you know, how they're managing their stormwater. Their stormwater is all contained within the site and doesn't actually go out to the City of Vancouver. So they're working with consultants and trying to get that worked out. But they technically are in violation of the stormwater permit through the city. And under the solid waste regulations, there is a very blanket statement that says, you must be in compliance with all state, federal, and local regulations. And so I asked for Derek Rocket to come down to ensure that, you know, yes, there may be these stormwater issues, and yes, they are an exempt facility, but they may not be related. They may or may not be related, but our finding was that they were not directly related. So, also in April, there was a swaddle training in Troutdale that Rich attended the conference, and a lot of really good information and a lot about the Chinese National Sword, a lot about recycling, landfill gas monitoring that we learned about, and also lithium ion battery and the hazards they are in collection. And so I've actually been talking a lot with Sarah Kearns in our business outreach to see if there's some takeaways from that of maybe how we handle batteries in the future. Their recommendation was, if you don't collect batteries curbside, don't start. If you do, consider not. They can really cause problems with the trucks and fires at the facilities, fires within the trucks. We had an incident even in our own building with a battery collection box that we had for, I think, the public, maybe staff.
It was supposed to be just for staff to recycle county batteries, but somehow got moved into the public
area. We had this box of batteries that were meant to be a collection, and they ended up in a public location, and we said, hey, can you guys take this? It's full. So we boxed it up and prepared it for shipping, and about 3 hours later, it started smelling, and the box started feeling hot, and we had Ecology Spill Response come. They went through the batteries. We found it was actually 2 9-volts that had been put in, and they were strong enough to still react. So it wasn't lithium ion, which was kind of our initial thought that it could be, but so it also was a good reminder of how we store batteries even at home. I know I buy a 15 pack because I will never listen to my smoke detector longer than like 7 beeps before it drives me crazy. So we keep like 15 just in case. but making sure that you store them, you know, even in individual bags so that they don't have contacts. But I'll be working with Sarah probably on some good messaging for the public regarding batteries and battery disposal, and also, you know, battery storage within your business or your home. So those are the kinds of things that I'm working on. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hanging on to what Melissa said about the lithium batteries, in that one session they showed a video that somebody had taken of somebody that had a cell phone in their pocket, and they were like driving down the road and it caught fire and they threw it out the door and it kind of like, and you heard about lithium batteries like in your laptop kind of exploding on a plane or whatever, so it's a concern. So I think we need to talk about programs, and I think the way on curbside to handle would be to tape them up so you can't have one battery contact another battery sort of thing.
The problem with taping them, with our batteries that we have here, when Ecology came out, we did the duct tape and taped them all up and made them all super safe. And then our battery recycler said, oh, we can't take them that way. So then we're kind of in a whole other predicament. So they prefer them for recycling to be in individual bags.
Like those little Ziploc bags. Ziploc bag. Mm-hmm.
We try to do the right thing by taking everything,
and
then our
sailors
said, we can't really do anything with this at this point.
So the things I wanted to, and Tanya's traveling, so I'm trying to report on what the city's been up to. And the one thing I wanted to share was, I think we talked about asbestos earlier on that. We've got information out that Waste Connections is giving out the gatehouses, and they've implemented policies, I think, at the beginning of February there. And then these are also being handed out at the permit centers throughout the county, different cities and so forth. But what we've done with our cleanup program, so we do have like an annual opportunity for every recognized neighborhood. We've got 65 neighborhoods in the city, and we usually get about $45 to $50 Saturday cleanups per year. And folks have been, sometimes they'll bring in some construction debris, they kind of remodel the bathroom or something. So we've been getting information out this year about the asbestos concerns through the neighborhoods and the people that organize those cleanups. The Waste Connections drivers that are there supporting the event also were kind of aware of what should or shouldn't go in the truck. So we've had pretty good success, I think, letting people know about this. We don't really want a whole lot of construction debris. We don't want somebody doing a rough roof tear off and then bringing like a 5 truckloads of that to the cleanup. But so we haven't really gotten that. So smaller projects and really just making sure that the right potentially asbestos containing materials are included. So I can pass this around if folks didn't get a chance to see those. And that was all I had.
All right. So cleanups. We're in the middle of cleanup season, so we did the 2 county cleanups, and then the city of Vancouver has an extensive list of cleanups, so we're working with them on getting that going. In Melissa's notes, she noted that the Georgia Pacific Mill shut down operation, as you guys are all aware, in April. Well, the bulk of their operation there is still running. Some of their facilities, the impact to the solid waste industry is That I think that facility took 50,000 tons plus annually of hog fuel, so ground up urban wood or something of the ilk. And they are still running one of the burners there that takes hog fuel. I'm not sure what they're doing with it, but they're running it for some reason. But they're only taking about, annualized, about 10,000 tons for comparison's sake. And then eventually we expect that that will probably go to zero at some point. So that leaves, you know, all that material without a home, essentially. Most of the Clark County material is already diverted to Longview, to the Capstone facility up there, but there's certainly a surplus of material on the market now, so that obviously creates price pressures. So they've got a buyer's market for hog fuel right now.
What is the Capstone facility?
It is. It was a Capstone paper plant, so they create paper products of some sort. I don't know what it is. They bought. They were bought by West Rock recently, and they'll be converting that process later this year, so it'll turn into a West Rock. So it's just another national paper company. And we talked about China Sword. We're continuing to monitor that. There's something that came out today that put further restrictions on material. I haven't read it, and so I don't understand it, but as I understand it, there could have a small implication. We don't sell much to China anymore. We do have a few orders going in there. But their restrictions are quite prohibitive to ship any material. But we are moving everything that we create. We just create a lot less than we used to, because we used to bring in material from outside Clark County. We don't really bring in much material from outside Clark County anymore. But everything is continuing to move, just at poor prices. Asbestos regulations, we talked about. That's been a fun process for us. We enacted new restrictions February 1st. The real impact on solid waste system has been, obviously we're cleaning up the asbestos, which is good, but we also have found that there was a lot of material coming from the Portland area to the Clark County transfer stations, and without a non-system license agreement, you were not allowed to bring material up from Portland per Portland and Metro regulations, and that material has either gone back to Portland or up to Cowlitz County landfill. We're not sure which. I think on the first day we rejected, I can't remember however many loads. It turned out half of the loads we rejected were not because of asbestos. It's just that we found out point of origin on the material, and it was coming from Portland. So we still do get a lot of contractors either trying to subvert the Portland system, which asks for a lot of information on the load, or they might be small contractors who live in Clark County or just hitting the dump on the way in or out, and then those folks are having to find other alternatives. I think the other thing I had was Washougal Transfer Station is now open Fridays and Saturdays and Wednesdays to the public. So we open up on Fridays out there. We did a kind of a slow rollout in the month of April. Just to get staffing, we didn't have it fully staffed out there yet, and just kind of wanted to see what happened. We typically do on a Wednesday, we do about 200 transactions, which is a lot for them. On a normal day, they have somewhere between 15 and 30 transactions, really just City of Transit, City of Camas route material that's picked up, and then Waste Connections routes. So Wednesdays are a big day, and then the weekends, we do about 250 customers on Saturdays, and that's just kind of onesie twosies. So far on Friday, we've been up to about 60 to 80, and we expect that to continue to grow. The good thing about that is it takes some of the pressure off of central transfer as well, because a lot of those loads would otherwise be going to the central. So Wednesday is one of our slowest days at central because Washougal is open. So,
how many transactions a day do you need to make it viable-ish?
It's hard to say. I was out there the first day, and the scale clerk was watching Law & Order reruns on her iPad, so my guesstimate is as long as she's not looking at reruns, then that's probably a good thing for us, which is probably about 200 transactions. We'd be happy with that. So, but the tons, you know, the tons are in the market one way or another, so it's just they're really kind of redirecting around to other areas. That should not be on.
It's sitting in the recorder.
I think that's all I have.
Thank you.
Did we already cover the solid waste funding assistance grant update?
We covered a little bit of it.
You want to cover the rest?
I've got a little bit more of it, yeah.
Okay.
That'd be great. So I think everybody has, I put together just a quick cheat sheet. just for everybody's understanding and the sake of making sure that I cover all my bases, the local solid waste financial assistance grant is a grant from the Department of Ecology. That money goes both to enforcement, which Melissa talked about. It also goes to planning and implementation, which is what we do over on our side, and the City of Vancouver does on their side. So I think you guys will remember it was, well, it was previously called the Coordinated Prevention Grant, or CPG, but it's basically from the state's Model Toxic Control Accounts, and it's been significantly decreasing year over year. So for those of you that were around, I think you will also recall that we, before I started, requested a tip fee increase in order to cover the loss of grant dollars that we were getting, because we were uncertain that that bill was going to, or that the, that budget was going to pass in any sort of timely manner. And if it did, we weren't certain what types of monies would be available to us. So we got that tip fee increase, as you all know, which started on January 1st. But then the capital budget did pass, and we were concerned that we would need to go to council to ask for permission to then go after this additional money, which we'd already asked to recover, which was, I think, we had tried to schedule a special session, and then it turns out we didn't need it, so to be conservative of people's time, we canceled it. So that was all, that's the backstory there. But essentially, this money goes to planning and implementing waste reduction and hazardous waste reduction and recycling strategies and programs and projects and research and planning. So this was a really quick turnaround from the time the capital budget was passed, and then from the time that they announced it, applications were due very, very quickly. And so in order to get our application in on time, we based it very heavily on the previous cycles grant. So it's a two-year grant. And we based this very heavily on making sure, since it is a two-year grant, but what you'll see is the effective date is July 1 of 2017. So we're almost already a year into this grant cycle, which gives us 1 year to spend down money that would have been spent over 2 years. So with the priority of ensuring that we spend down the grants doing things that we're already doing and programs that had already been supported by the grant, we based this application on the previous application's details. So I put together just a brief document for everybody's understanding. There's nothing significantly different on here. It's based maybe a little bit of wording and some negotiation with Ecology based on things that they had trouble reimbursing us for last time, based on whatever reasons they didn't want to give us money for anything. But this is a non-competitive grant. It's distributed throughout the state based upon the population of the county. You just have to jump through all of their hoops, and then you get their grant, and then you have to jump through all of their hoops later, and then they threaten not to give it to you again, and then the next time they just give it to you again. So I don't know if that's the spirit of my experience with it, but it's a non-competitive grant, but you do have to prove that you're going to spend it on what they want you to, and then you have to follow up that you've done what you said you were going to do and do your best to give them all of the metrics that they want to get. So our grant is broken down into four categories or tasks. One being moderate risk waste collection and management. So again, the goal of this is to try to do what we're doing now and spend down the money, because you get almost, it's almost worse if you don't spend money, if you leave money on the table. That almost dings you worse for future cycles than being unruly or not giving them the metrics that they want. So in order to ensure that we're spending all of the money on the table, it's broken down. So just real quick up at the top, the effective date is January 1, 2017. We have until June 30th, 2019 to spend the dollars. The Ecology contribution is about $306,000, and the county match, which is a 25% of the total grant, is $102,000. So we take in $102,000, they match that with $306,000. So this is broken down into, like I mentioned, four tasks. So moderate risk waste collection and management, which addresses our looking at our fixed facilities, our mobile collection events that Kim talked about, the paint recycling programs, the paint take-back programs for recycling and recovering paint, take-back at the store, at targeted stores in the county, moderate risk waste education and outreach, so both looking at possibly funding or using these dollars to offset costs from Washington State University Extension Pest Management and Green Gardening education work, as well as green cleaning workshops through Master Composter Recycler, and also small quantity generators. So working with SQGs or small quantity generators of hazardous waste to appropriately and identify technical support, one of these programs potentially being rehab the lab, or taking a look at school programs that have, even schools as new as Skyview, have 50-year-old chemicals in their laboratories, and helping them identify, we can't, through this grant, we can't fund the disposal of it, but we can go in and provide them assistance and technical assistance potentially to help them identify all the dangerous things in their lab that are sitting up on unprotected shelves, and either properly identify it properly, label it properly, or identify ways for them to dispose of it. Task two, targeting residential recycling and waste reduction. All of our activities for Green Neighbors focusing on residential single and multifamily contamination, as well as overall waste reduction and recycling participation increase. Task three, organics management. Again, funding the activities and billing the time and the activities that the Master Compost Recycler program is doing. Two new things that we're potentially taking a look at and have been approved so far is Sarah will be working on LeanPath, which is a tool for restaurants to track food waste and identify how to reduce food waste at the front of the house. I guess technically in the back of the house is what it's called, but helps them be more efficient with what they're buying, what they're wasting, and identifying things. So it's sort of a tracking tool that restaurants can implement. And there's also a desire to expand our demonstration, our composting demonstration sites to the east side of the county, or the eastern part of the county. So taking a look at our Pacific Park demonstration site. So we already have a demonstration garden for natural gardening and zero scaping and minimal yard care, or minimal impact yard care, and taking a look at putting a demonstration site there. And then finally, task four, business recycling and waste prevention, mostly falls within schools. So this is the milk dispenser pilot program, where we're working on identifying a few target schools that have either, we're still taking a look, and this might be a good project for SWAC depending on how far we are along to provide input, but looking at how do we determine whether milk dispensers at schools, either schools that are willing to put recess before lunch, or schools that have certain nutrition programs in place, or what types of environments do these milk dispensers have the largest impact? So in other areas that we've looked at, it increases milk consumption and also water consumption, because they're water dispensers. So it decreases that milk waste, but also decreases the need to recycle or dispose of containers or cartons at these schools. So looking at 3 to 4 schools potentially, and Michelle is working on setting some criteria, so maybe SWAC involvement on helping set criteria might be good, but I haven't pitched that to Michelle and she's out of town, so don't hold me to it. But and then also continuing to work with Washington Green Schools, like I mentioned, which goes to supporting schools and assisting them in achieving their waste reduction and goals. We obviously can't pay for things that aren't solid waste related, so we can't pay for any of the work that Washington Green Schools does, or any of the work the schools do on energy or water consumption, but we do, they focus heavily on our contract with waste reduction. So that's kind of this grant in a nutshell. So we, Melissa and Enforcement, applied for their grant separately. It's the same chunk of money, but it's a 29-71 split or something like that. 29 going to Enforcement, 79 going, or 71 going to Planning and Implementation. So our applications were separate, and she's further along because she is not a procrastinator like I am. So we have not gotten the award yet. We're just finalizing the final draft of the scope of work. So anybody have any questions on any of that?
Okay. I do. Can I? It's kind of a comment question.
Absolutely.
I'm really pleased to see the food waste prevention piece. Is that required, or is this just
required in the grant application?
Mm-hmm.
No, not this cycle. They may take a look at that in the future, but I think that's something that a lot of jurisdictions, especially in our region where Metro is looking at mandatory food scraps recovery for different tiers of businesses that are food waste generating businesses, I think it behooves us to take a good look at food waste in our area, but that's not a requirement for the grants, and it's not a requirement anywhere in our region.
And so this was just addressed as you're coming back with a response. Great. I really appreciate that.
Okay.
I think that's a really important under-identified opportunity to, with the waste stream management, and especially residential, as well as business.
Yeah, we haven't worked. I think right now we are definitely, I know one of the conversations that we need to bring forward is, just addressing food waste in residents. I know that there's, that Green Neighbors does a lot of waste reduction and food waste reduction education, but I think potentially engaging in conversations about just the broader need for what food waste looks like in the county and what solutions are out there for us to both address it, the reduction piece, but then the scrap piece. And I know the city of Vancouver is looking very, I don't know if you want to say anything or if you can, but looking at food waste options and composting options for residents. So.
Yeah, we're looking at the potential for adding food waste to our yard debris.
Interesting.
But I think, and I agree with you, that I think nationally it's like 25% of all food produced is wasted. And we consider the embedded energy in the water and resources and pollution associated with producing that 25%. Mm-hmm. If we could deal with that, to cut that in half even, that would be huge.
Definitely support that.
So we will have to, like Melissa said, we have to provide quarterly updates to Ecology, so it will be very easy for us to also bring, those here for us to share with you what progress is being made on these, and then also get comments and feedback on how we can improve on what we're doing. So, that is my list. We're calling it LaSwafa because it's harder to say. Swift.
Swift.
See, that's our name for the grant. That's that.
Good.
Policies and legislation.
I guess let's keep talking. For a second, and then I'm going to hand off to you. So,
okay.
So at a previous meeting, it was raised that there was identified that SWAC would like to be involved in statewide legislation and either supporting, opposing, researching, understanding what that looks like. So Kim and I had a meeting with our county council's policy advisor, and we brought this question to, her name is Lindsay, she'll probably come to our next SWAC meeting, but she's been very helpful in informing Kim and I on what that would look like. So given that legislation is over and a lot of the bills that are on the, I think we emailed out this Washington State Association of Counties list of bills, most of which died. It provides a very high-level summary of what the focus was and what the intent was with the sponsor and the position, and exactly where it died. So I want to give a very high, I want to give a quick summary of what Lindsay shared with us about what SWAC involvement in legislation would look like, and then hand it off to Steve to potentially, as a group, obviously you can decide what you want to do, but my thought is, and what Lindsay's suggestion would be, was to elect or have somebody volunteer to be a point person that we would sort of be a SWAC liaison to our policy advisor. And this person would be responsible for helping SWAC facilitate the conversations and support the things that they want to support and do some of the research that SWAC wants to learn more about. And what it would look like from what Lindsay has shared with us is, for example, we'll take the first bill on here, which is the electronic waste collection, improving the convenience of electronic waste collection. If that was a bill that council or that SWAC decided they would like to put their weight behind, what would happen is we would be asked to put together some type of a position and a recommendation, and the first step would be taking that to county council through Lindsay, their policy advisor. At that point, we would be encouraging SWAC with our support and then their weight and our weight to then act upon finding an avenue for supporting that, whether that's working with lobbyists or contacting the electeds that are either in favor of it or opposed, depending on who we have access to, and making those recommendations as a, so SWAC would be acting sort of as an independent body separate from our staff and separate from the committee, or the council, excuse me, from the council, to make recommendations as a group on what you feel like is important in the county and what you feel like the council should be supporting. From that would be one of, I guess, more results, but I guess the biggest would be the three biggest that we talked about would be, if council decides that that is something that, yes, that is important, and we feel like it is important and we want to get behind that, then our liaison would work with council to take that position and help council and Lindsay move it forward to whatever the avenues are. And you'll have to forgive me if somebody knows more about what those avenues are. This is a new process for me as well, so I'm learning along with you. Council would move forward with SWAC on finding the best way to support or oppose what they wanted to, whatever the recommendation is. Second option is the SWAC could say, or I'm sorry, the county council could say, yes, this is something that's important, but it's not a priority for the council right now, so we give you free will to work with Lindsay to draft the letters and draft the communications that SWAC wants to send upstream to support or oppose any of the issues on the table. The third option, and seemingly less likely, is that council says, absolutely no, this is not something we will support, and we discourage you from supporting it. And if that was the event, and SWAC still found like it was important, you guys would have to go rogue and use your own resources and do your own lobbying outside of separate from SWAC. So Lindsay did not foresee a situation where something like that would happen, but just FYI, that's worst case, you would be excommunicated, but you would still be allowed to go do it on your own time, I guess. So that's not quite a scenario I see happening, but and what this looks like is both once legislation starts, there might be more of an active role, but that we have the opportunity to communicate and reach out to both electeds that we have access to that either voted for or against something to sway or to inform or to share our opinions with them a little bit more. So it's something that we can start as soon as SWAC is ready to form opinions and positions on things. And we can start connecting with Lindsay as soon as we're ready to start acting on those things now. And then our involvement or SWAC's involvement might evolve as we get closer to legislation starting up again. That being said, in order for, I think just symbolically to ensure that SWAC is acting on their own, that I, from this conversation both today to identify somebody that would be willing to step up and take that lead or at least start that conversation about who would be a good person to bring the voice of SWAC to Lindsay and the council and be a liaison back and forth. But then to also, as a group, take a look at these and begin to prioritize either what you want to support strongly, what you want to oppose, or what you want more information on. And what I will say is that our role in this will be to hand off the ultimate decision-making in the conversation and let you guys facilitate that conversation amongst yourselves. And we are here to provide next steps once you're ready to move and connect with Lindsay, but then also to do some research and do some more information gathering on things that you want to know more about. But in order to ensure that we're not, that there's no appearance that we're, and this is, again, I think I'm being super paranoid, but that we're not using SWAC, or we're not manipulating any opinions or anything to get what we need out of council, that I really want this to be an independent body, that I wanted to hand this part of the conversation over to SWAC. And we can answer questions and we can provide things, and we're more than welcome to come back to you with our position on things, but we don't take formal positions on things very often, just... but this is an opportunity for SWAC to act as an independent body to do just that. So unless there's any other questions or you want to get some more clarification, but I'm hoping that my goal for tonight was to get somebody that would act as a point person and begin the conversation about prioritizing or at least highlight a few of these bills if you've had time to review it that you would like us to get more information from Lindsay on, or to do some more research and digging to provide you with the backup documentation that you need to make informed decisions on what you want to do. So there's no other questions, I will turn it over to Steve to facilitate this conversation and decide what you guys would like to do.
So if I hear my task correctly, my first step is to see if we can identify a person who wants to take this lead role.
Correct.
Having said that, is there anybody interested in taking that lead role?
I am.
Volunteer.
I have a background in political science. I've worked in politics for many years, and many of our elected officials are our members, so I already have
contacts
with that. So, and I go up to the Olympia every January to lobby for the realtors, so I already know that language and I know the culture, so I'm willing to.
We have a ringer. All right.
Just to further discussion, would this be something that we would want to put a three-person panel together? Jennifer wants to take the lead. She can, chair a subcommittee. I don't know how many bills come out on a regular basis, but is one person going to have the ability to sort through with a fine-tooth comb all of these items?
What we will be able to provide, so this, I got this, so we have, Washington State Association of Counties has a solid waste lobbyist, and this, they put together reports and they track all the solid waste related ones. So these are the solid, there's a medication take back program that's not on here. I don't know how, didn't get on here, but as I understand it, these are the solid waste bills related, these are the bills related to solid waste that came up in this list. So it wouldn't be necessarily sorting through the thousands of things.
Well, I guess what I guess was working off of this list. Because
okay.
Let's say that there's a dozen things on the list.
Correct.
Is one person going to go through all 12, or if we had a panel of three people that could sit down, each of them give you up, you take four, I'll take four, and we'll meet over coffee, we'll talk about it. It would not be a quorum. So it's not going to be an official meeting, but we can have a meeting of the minds and discuss whether something is worth bringing up to the whole.
I believe that that would be, I think that's a great way to respect everybody's personal time and respect everybody's time commitments outside of Slack. I actually am meeting with Lindsay tomorrow, so I can run that by her, but I would say that if that's the plan you guys would like to go, I would say let's move forward with that plan and that approach, if that's something you guys support, and if anything changes, or if Lindsay says, no, that's not at all possible.
Sure. Do you have a preference?
I think the three-person panel would be a great idea, especially since me being new, too.
Okay.
And I think another point on that is that we meet like in November and then February, and so committee of the whole is difficult to kind of have a discussion, so those three could kind of work together and kind of have maybe them. And I'm not sure if we decided we could do any response by email or not. So maybe over the early January or something, we can kind of start following and then kind of communicate by email. And then maybe we'll have a February meeting or and be able to kind of act in person. But I think it would be good to kind of have that group kind of help us know what's coming up.
Because typically legislative session ends in when? February? March?
It depends. It depends on what year you're in. I think, 65 days if it's an even, and...
Let me refine my question. When would SWAC need to meet in order to get an effective voice out?
I think that part is that's the ongoing. So I think that we could if there's a communication. Let's see. So we can start. There's opportunities to have an effective voice year round, I guess. So I think that between now and the next 3 months would be a good chance to formulate opinions on these, and maybe the committee could communicate via email. If I don't know what our bylaws say and how communication via email works differently than being in person. So there's opportunities to have an effective voice year-round. I don't know, maybe you know more, and I can ask Lindsay again tomorrow, but I don't know what the most effective timing for a voice is.
Would it be something that we would be able to put on a regular SWAC agenda, or is it something that we might consider having a special meeting for
on the agenda?
And I think this might be also a learning cycle for us, for SWAC too, where we may learn that we all of a sudden need to have a special meeting because there's something timely that we really need to get behind, and we see if it'll work. But I also think that this year might be, we could also approach it, or SWAC, you could approach it as a pilot year or a learning year and kind of see what sticks, I guess. But that might be a question that I can have Lindsay provide a little bit more feedback, because she's also come in from a lot of experience up there and has done a lot of this work as well. So I guess that's not a question I have a good answer for. I could learn a little bit, but I know that there's opportunities to have an effective voice. Because now talking to people that voted against some of these things that SWAC feels is important is an effective way to have that voice. That being said, if we do have to go through council, that is an added step and an added time frame that I don't have a sense of how long that process would take. So,
is there a precedent elsewhere, like in other cities, or have we investigated that?
I am part of the Washington State Association of Counties, Washington Association of County Solid Waste Managers, it's the WASAC WAXWIN. And I sent this out to this group, and they were not aware of other SWACs taking this type of proactive approach to being involved in the legislation. That was just a simple email survey, and I would not take a lack of response as a no, but their chair, Laura Byrd, does a lot of that. This was the first inquiry that she had gotten, because I reached out to her to get this list and also talk to her about are there models for us, and she wasn't aware of one. So I can do a little bit more digging. I just haven't come across it yet, so.
Okay, and can you write a framework of kind of how this would be built out so that, you're talking kind of conceptually right now, and it'd be really nice to be able to contemplate, something more concrete.
So when you say, are you asking for more of a write-up of what we're talking about, a flowchart? Are you talking of?
Just essentially the the concept, and flowchart, advantages, maybe challenges, barriers. I don't know. Just what are we looking at? Because you're right. You've got the county council, and how do we best address those conditions?
So. Yeah, and I think that Lindsay will inform. So maybe at some point, because this is the group that is dedicated to taking a look at solid waste issues in the county. So this is sort of a subcommittee of the council in not so direct a term. But I think that is something that maybe with Jennifer, if Jennifer takes on this role, then we could build what this is actually going to look like. We could meet up with Lindsay and we could chat and we could figure out exactly what this would look like and what time frames and
what are our objectives? How do we track our goals or whatever, our progress?
Yeah, I would say, I guess just a very high level goal is to, proactively support the issues that affect Clark County that you feel are the most important. And then my goal for this is to help facilitate that and figure out the best way for this group to have an effective voice. And working with our policy advisor and working with you guys and trying to figure out exactly what that. So there is some level of this that is conceptual because there isn't a good model for this necessarily, and none of our other TACs, our technical advisory committees, seem to be doing this either. So it's sort of, I'm not going to say this is new ground. I'm sure somebody's doing it someplace, but I haven't been able to find a successful model or a model of this inside. So we can get as concrete as we can, and I can work with Jennifer and Lindsay and Kim on trying to build that, but I think a lot of this is also going to be kind of testing out what it does end up looking like. So.
Like a working document, started here, and maybe our end goal is over here, but we may go, whatever.
So that might be a good, I don't know, Steve, if that's a decision the group wants, and Jennifer, if you decide, but that might be a good first step is to, another first step is to, once we have a person, is to figure out what that framework would look like and create that living document that Simone was talking about, if that's something that you guys want to do.
Okay. So, go ahead.
A couple comments. One is that the solid waste plan does have some recommendations in it related to legislation and working at the state level.
That's right.
I think that would be good guidance about the list of stuff we've got pre-approval, I think, from the SWAC and all the cities. Mm-hmm. Do that. some things are addressed in recommendations maybe that aren't legislative, but we're saying, yeah, we're supportive of, you know, like medication take back, mm-hmm. Even though there's no recommendation. So I think that would be another kind of indication that, yeah, you can do that.
Those recommendations go to the county commissioners?
Yeah, they approve the plan every 5 years or so, and also to all the city councils.
And I would also say that, just to build on top of that, this might be a really good chance for us to see what's going on statewide to help inform mm-hmm. the solid waste management plan that's coming up in the near future, within the next couple of years as well. So that serves two purposes, I think.
And then my other thought was, not everything that goes on that won't be necessarily as legislative bills. So I know there was like a call early in the session from folks concerned that the litter fee that goes to the state has been diverted for multiple years to the park programs. And there was a push like, hey, let's kind of send the governor or the legislature a recommendation that they put that money back. And we weren't able to act quickly. So that could be something that comes up, like, hey, this is something we need to do, and we need something in by next Monday. Could the legislative subcommittee kind of help form an opinion and run it through Lindsay or something, probably, to see if that's okay.
Are there groups that you advise looking into that are like advocacy around this stuff in the state? Or?
So like I mentioned, the long acronym that I'm in, I mean, there's, I don't know from your sector, I know there's groups and there's lobbyists.
Yeah, the Washington, you know, Refuse and Recycling Association represents the haulers and the solid waste companies themselves and has a mm-hmm. group of lobbyists that handle that. There's Washington State Recycling Association. Typically the county, you know, the county association with the state handles a lot of issues as well from the public perspective. And the city, is there a city's one as well?
Yeah, there's Association of Washington Cities yeah. and the Washington Organic Recycling Council, I think that's there.
How granular each one gets is variable.
So. Yeah, I think, yeah, because I know with the, we, like the county solid waste managers group through the county's association has a lobbyist, but they mostly work on statewide financing and funding, lobbying, and have been very heavily involved in this ecology grant and the financing and the requirements around ecology. So they may not be working on, so that could be another piece, as we can see what is happening, what we can connect with WSRA, the Washington State Recycling Association, and WORA, the ones that he's talking about, and kind of see who's doing what and feel if there's a niche that has to be filled. But there are some, but yes.
Yeah. Like land use, we have FutureWise. I don't know if there's a similar kind of mm-hmm. progressive lobbying entity.
I would say WSRA and WORA would probably be the two most prominent ones that I know mm-hmm. about. In our
yeah,
industry.
And WRA is really heavily focused on franchising and, you know, protecting the hauling situation
yeah, right.
and all that stuff. So they could be a little bit of a, there it is, concerned about the, I mean, this is going to sound bad, but they're more concerned about the food. Company interests
totally.
And less about the more day-to-day stuff. So,
yeah.
So my next question is, would anybody like to join Jennifer in this effort?
I would.
There's one. So you got a committee of two so far. That's a good thing.
Okay. I'd love to know when you guys, if you guys meet. I just very commitment.
Yeah, I feel like I just need more information on what is the time commitment, and
right.
you know, I don't, I, how can I best contribute, and just I kind of need to see more because I don't want to
over promise. Yeah.
So maybe what we can do is next step is get together Chris and Jennifer and Lindsay and maybe help put together a more, maybe hold off on. I said I was not going to facilitate this, but what do you guys think the best step for the, how do we come to a more concrete with the two that we have and spending some more time with our resources outside of this group to understand a little bit more about what it will look like and what the time commitment is and that kind of.
Do you feel comfortable putting a proposal together?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll let you take the lead on that and work with it.
Yep.
And, that whatever our next meeting is, you can bring that back and we can put that on our agenda. Let me ask this. Does it seem appropriate that we make a motion that you guys are going to play this role?
I think we might want to establish the group before we establish members.
Okay.
So do you have to, I imagine there's establishing a subcommittee process and then nominating a subcommittee chair.
That sounds right.
A subcommittee chair. And if that's not right, we can redo it. But
can we do that today, or should we hold that for later?
I think that would be great to think if, I don't know, I'm looking at you, I don't know this.
My suggestion is that we have that as a motion in today's meeting because it's on our agenda. And I'd be happy to make that motion that Jennifer, you are in that role. Assume that's a role you want to play.
Okay. So the motion is to create a legislative subcommittee
of SWAC. Jennifer will be the chair and the main person, and our representative and our liaison. That's my motion.
I would second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Wonderful.
What would you have in mind?
That was a good discussion. I had a plan in mind, but I was ready for it to go wherever it went. So it sounds maybe like it might be more prudent to hold off on prioritizing topics and give you another quarter to stew over some of these things while putting together a plan. Well,
Jennifer, my next suggestion is that you coordinate with staff and meet with Lindsay and get a lay of the land and get an understanding of what the pending legislation is. And then at our next meeting, we can put this on the agenda and have a conversation and provide you the support that you need to continue to move forward.
Okay.
I guess I have two questions. There's a list, I think you mentioned that there's like National Recyclers list, or is this something, right? That articles have been sent out about recycling topics and stuff? That doesn't sound... No? Yeah. Not ringing a bell. All right.
Like a listserv?
Like a listserv.
Yeah, there's a few... there's a few, like, newsletters and other, like, magazines and other things like that that are good ones to follow for upcoming things in the area or nationally.
If you could send out a couple of those.
Okay.
And then also just mention that in the SWAC document, there's we already had legislative proposals in the SWAC handbook, is it? Not the handbook, but the Richie mentioned there was a policy that we had already proposed.
Oh, in the solid waste management plan. There's some recommendations on supporting product stewardship and supporting. Those are in the back of the recommendation section of the solid waste management plan.
Okay. Maybe if you could copy those and send them out to us so we know what those are. That's cool.
Yeah, and you have a fresh digital copy of it too, so we can work on getting that together and kind of pulling it together in a way that makes sense for you. Cool.
Any other discussion on this topic? Regional systems study update.
All right, thank you all. That is Mike.
Steel. Kids up here. So as Travis mentioned earlier, staff's been working on the regional system study to be the basis for the update of the next comprehensive plan, and our statutory authority is for a 20-year planning horizon. And in years past, we've really kind of, you know, looked at it and sort of, I don't want to say rubber stamp, but, you know, we didn't do a major update or analysis of the recommendations in the plan. And with, you know, the situation with the growth that we've seen in the last few years and, you know, the timing of the update and contracts that are kind of coming to a close over the next 10 years, it's time to really take a look at those recommendations, evaluate the system, and determine what our steps are going to be in the future. And these are going to be some big steps financially for the county. Could be, you know, some major engineering that needs to be done and capital improvements. So what we've done is we've really taken a look at this and in the, as the tasks in phases. And the first phase that we're going to look at it is really the financing and, you know, the plan. So before we start to, you know, fix the system by building, we really want to look at what kind of revenues and expenditures is the system generating today. What are some opportunities to continue to operate the system without major capital improvements? And if we can't work our way out of that through planning, then we'll move on into the engineering and capital improvements. So basically what we've done is phase one is considered finance and planning. And I'm just going to go over this in real high level terms because we don't have a lot of time here, but we are going to look at the cost components of the system, and that's going to drive a lot of our ability to manage that system in the future. You know, what revenues are out there, how can we manage that, how can we invest in the system that we have today to keep it operating in the future. And so that first cost component in the financial analysis, that's a big deal. And part of that is that we're going to ask them to update the population and waste generation figures that were incorporated into the last plan. Those came out and were based on the crash. And so we are already outstripping both of those.
Yeah.
And so those need to be updated big time so we can really know what our throughput need is in the future and how are we going to deal with that. And so really that within task one, we've, you know, obviously we further break this down. But task one is really the financial analysis, and then we get that all down to sort of a pro forma income statement. It won't be an audited income statement, so it'll be from multiple sources, some from Waste Connection, some from industry standards, to get us sort of a snapshot of what that system looks like financially. And then we go into that task two of task one, which really is, you know, that waste generation and the estimates. And then what we're really looking at and why that's so important is one of the biggest issues we're facing is self-haul. Public self-haul and managing public self-haul, it's just crushing the system right now. We're 1,000 tons a day in each of these facilities, but because of the traffic, there's no way you're going to get that day in and day out, get those people through there. So really, Central has the largest problem, but it's starting to impact us at West Van and Washougal. Washougal, we've done a soft opening where we've added one day. West Van has the option to add another day. These are some of the actions we can take to sort of spread out the cell hall, but we really need to know what, with those population estimates, what, how's that going to continue to grow?
It'll keep growing.
And how do we manage it?
Yeah.
And so, based on those, you know, based on that, some of the things that we also want to look at is how can we get them not to come to the facility through economic means. And there's really two ways to do that. One is we don't really have a minimum fee, we have a transaction fee. Most facilities, including Metro Cross River, have both. So, you know, when you drive in the door, you're allowed, you know, I think on that side of the river, it's 480 pounds per trip. A lot of them are more than the 275, 300 pounds as a minimum fee. And then that is based specifically on your tonnage rate. You know, it's 5 cents a pound, we'll call it, because that's fairly close. And that gets you your minimum fee, and then you still have a transaction fee on top of that. And that is how Metro, when you walk through the door across the river, it's $28 for 480 pounds. And that pushes people to the curb and limits their trips through the facilities. So we have those two tools, implementing a minimum service fee and or a differential transaction fee. So for example, today, it's $10 per transaction to all facilities. So we have less traffic at each of these, you know, the West End facility and the East End facility. Hypothetically, you could raise the transaction fee at Central to 15 and kind of encourage them to go to these other facilities through economic means, because it's, you know, hey, I'm not going to go all the way over to Central and when I've got a facility right here and it's $5 less. And that's just an example. So it may be a combination of this, but we're going to evaluate both those options as ways to economically kind of push them to the system. The other one is that we're going to evaluate, which is, you know, I believe transaction fees is part of the recommendations already in there, and the other one is a minimum service level, you know, another universal service. We're still working on some of that terminology. The county does not require, you know, single family dwellings to have garbage.
Right.
You know, it's voluntary. Battleground is not required, neither is the center. We have done zip code surveys and we see the number of folks coming out of Battleground, Fresh Prairie area in particular, that are going to Central. And you know, we've tried twice to get Battleground's council to take a look at this, but we really didn't have all the data to show them. And I think to really show them the problem that, you know, their citizens by not having this are causing the system. And I think it has to be sort of a mutually agreed thing that, hey, the county's going to do this, you guys need to do this, and the center needs to do it. Mm-hmm. And so those are kind of our, you know, we have tools, but I don't, my professional gut is telling me that's not going to get us there. And so I think what we're going to end up doing, like the first deliverable will be, let me get to that page level. You know, kind of preparing a matrix in some presentation materials for SWAC and regional solid waste system committee to kind of take a look at and come up with some recommendations to move forward into the final report. And from there, it's, you know, we'll, it'll be all compiled and we'll be able to talk about it more comprehensively of, you know, what's moving forward to the next phase and can we get ourselves out of that. And one of the other things that's coming up in the near future, we're going to be potentially extending the contract, and if the contract has a clause in it, if we extend in 2021 to 2027, then we can buy the facilities for $1. And what we want to take a look at as part of this is, what would that ownership look like? What would it take for us to own it? And that kind of goes back to that financing piece. You know, will we need, you know, capital improvements on top of all of that? And so that's that task force. And in the end, you know, once again, we'll have presentations and matrices for you guys to look at and make recommendations that are going to be incorporated into what we would call the phase one report. And in the end, that's, we're going to have, you know, that discussion. Will this do it? Will this get us there? And if we all say no, then the recommendation is we need to take a look at phase two, which is in, you know, the capital improvements. And we go through, there's a number of scenarios we go through there. I mean, we've looked at a lot of this already, but we haven't really put it into a cohesive study, and that's what all this is about. So, I mean, back in 14, we looked at potentially siting a facility up to the north. You know, we landed at Ridgefield, in the port of Ridgefield. And at that time, they wrote us a letter back and said, you'll have a high bar, you know, to site a facility here. I think we need to revisit that, you know, the siting criteria, the sites that we looked at, see what's still available up in that area.
Is it near the port property?
Yeah, they had mentioned when Kim had talked to them about it that there might be some other properties that we should go back and look at again. The property that we are still interested is still available. It's off of Tim Road. We kind of go through the cul-de-sac, and there's a frontage road, and there's some agricultural property right there. And it would require improvement to that road, but it's still there. But, you know, I think we need to kind of take a look at, you know, these other sites. And so revisiting that study is probably something we'll take a look at. But that still doesn't get us typical we're in at Central. So at Central, we need to probably evaluate some, you know, proposed improvements there. One of those improvements is expanding into the back. There's the Waste Connection, CRCO owns some property back there, which would be sufficiently large enough to site a public cell hall, split those two streams. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a commercial where we have the facility today and a lot of queuing room to get them off of 503 and back into that area. And that queuing is one of our major problems. And on weekends, you'll see it backed up in both directions. And what's coming sooner than later is a light at 107th and a median up that road.
Yep.
So you're going to be limited, according to WSDOT, to maybe they'll leave the left turn in going north, but you will no longer be able to turn out going north.
Yep.
From the facility. So I think in the long run, safety will dictate a right-in, right-out facility there.
Yep.
And so one of the things that we've looked at and we talked about last year was Waste Connections acquire some property for potential deceleration lane or a turn radius improvement there. After those buildings went up, literally the distance between what we have and the property is 5 feet. I don't know that we can get the utilities in there. And that's the first thing that WSDOT brought up as on the deceleration lane. Their preference would be turn radius improvement and then a long queue back into the facility behind. And so I think we're going to hear that from WSDOT. That'll be some of the comments we hear. But, you know, we need to bring in some engineering experts with, you know, skill sets, ideas that maybe we haven't seen or thought of to help us work our way through this. I mean, we've done a lot of work. We've got complete plan sets for the turn radius and the deceleration lane. The one thing that we didn't have when we went out to the property, and I warned everybody about this, is we had not completed the negotiations with the utilities to determine how much space we would need or what easements we would need for those utilities. So we need to go through that process. And then the third and most challenging thing at that site is that it's operated under a conditional use. Neighborhoods have sprung up around it, and it will be very challenging to permit an expansion there. And I won't sugarcoat it one way or the other. It's going to be tough. But I think it could be done with the right outreach and the right design. Mitigations to, you know, calm the neighbors, and the fact that it's in a pit and there's property up on top that they also own that could be a buffer or even a park, I think it can be done. But it's a long haul, and one of the things we need to do is bring somebody in, have them go through that permitting process to evaluate, you know, is it feasible and what's it going to take. So, you know, the first part, like I say, is, you know, the planning and deciding what we're going to do. You know, can we not have to build? The second part is really engineering intensive and you know, what's it going to take? What's it going to cost? What's that timeline look like? The third piece is sort of optional at this point. And, it, you know, so you've got real high level detail and scope for task one. More of a guiding engineering piece in task two because we want their ideas. And task three is assisting us with incorporating this into the plan. That's an optional task right now, and we're hoping that we can get to a certain point and Ecology will fund that. It should be grant eligible, but at this point we don't know that. And having that assistance and some outside skill sets in the presentations and, you know, to and stakeholders, particularly, you know, councils and you know, potentially even you guys, you know.
Neighborhood groups.
Yeah, just various groups to get to push this through. Because this is not going to be, it's not going to be an easy thing. So, yeah. Any of this, I mean, no one wants to hear that their rates have to go up at a facility or they need an MMB or they, you know, you got to have garbage. You know, at my level, it all makes sense because I've done this for 27 years. But that's not the way it always works outside. So that kind of in a greater scheme of things is what we plan to do. We're starting to work on the guts of the RFP itself, and that's where some of the scoring and selection is coming in. And we'll have more of that as we get a little further along. I hope to be done maybe by the mid-month, but probably more likely at the end of the month with a solid draft. You can get some more feedback and, you know, kind of determine how it's going to work. But, you know, we're probably mid-summer before we have something on board.
And that was that earlier conversation. I did ask Rich if he would be comfortable in serving sort of a dual role because he is part of that RFP development team and has been at all of the meetings so far to develop that RFP and will be involved in the selection process. So that would be another thing that I wanted to ensure, that there is SWAC liaison and SWAC involvement in that selection process and then moving forward. So just within the group, I'll let Rich speak for himself, but the option was that if somebody really also wants to feel strongly that they need to be involved separate from Rich's involvement, that is an option that's available as well. So,
yeah, and that would really be my preference if we could have a SWAC representative, that I don't have to have two hats. So it's nice if I could be the City of Vancouver representative and have a SWAC representative separate. So I'm only willing to do it if there's nobody else that has the time.
There's a third RFP role for finding a vendor.
We've got the legislative committee, and then having SWAC involvement on evaluating the vendor that would result, that will be applying for the RFP that Mike is talking about, and then Kim is leading the charge on our recycling contract, which will be much further out, more likely 2019, sometime in that calendar year, taking a look at being a part of that evaluation process. So. The first two happening simultaneously, this last one probably happening down the road, but also overlapping with some of this work. So,
So what we're looking at right now is sort of an initial screening that would be done, you know, internally. Probably that's a role I would, you know, if myself, the grants and contracts, ensure that the, you know, the applications or the proposals were complete, and maybe get it down to, you know, a reasonable level to screen. Then there's a screening process based on about the 100 points. And then we're going to have an interview committee also. So we have not, you know, laid out who's in those roles yet. I know that Scott Sawyer at Battleground would like to participate and represent the small cities on this as long as it doesn't overwhelm them before. And so he's going to, you know, help us kind of do a quick review of the RFP before we send it out for the regional steering, represent the regional system steering committee also, if they're agreeable to that, and then potentially be on either the screening team or the interview team. So, you know, we've already got part of the group starting to form together, and, you know, so there's a role here for SWAC that's pretty typical that we've handled it that way. Mm-hmm. On things like this, and I'm trying to remember how we did. Pretty confident. I can't remember who was on the single family. Rich, do you remember who that SWAC member was?
I want to think, wasn't there Will?
It might have been Will. Yeah.
Edgerly, I think.
Yeah.
And we could work with, and we could probably work on whittling down exactly what the time limit would be, but it would be looking at probably a handful of responses to the RFP and evaluating and scoring and probably sitting down as part of that final conversation. I can't imagine it won't be a long-term thing and it wouldn't be a huge commitment, but it would require reviewing the applications. So if if SWAC is either okay with the members that are on board, or if somebody would like to be involved, or you would like to wait until we get a better sense of, we can communicate with SWAC in between now and the next meeting to get a more concrete look at what that schedule is and what that time commitment would look like.
Well, so let me frame the question. Is there anybody that, with the exception of Rich, that would like to play this role in evaluating the RFP and the potential vendors?
What's the time frame for that, the issue of the RFP?
It's still pretty flexible because I'm hoping into June maybe, and then 30 days to get the proposal back, something like that.
It's probably, yeah, mid to late summer doing the evaluations, but...
I mean, it's a complex project, mm-hmm. and I want to do it right, so I'm at the tail end of this other highly complex project. I'm pushing that one out the door. I've been working on this, and so I'm really transitioning over into that, but that's all that, with the disasters, there's a lot on my plate right now. So I'm thinking we've made some real progress lately, and hopefully by the 17th we're done with the scope. And then it's putting the rest of the pieces together.
Thanks.
So we can get better, we'll have better feedback within 3-4 weeks is what I think the best answer we can give you right now.
So do I have a volunteer? We're going to wait for more information.
I would recommend you guys just kind of table this right now, knowing it's out there, and let people stew on it a little bit.
Okay. Can you do that?
You guys have any other questions about where we're heading with this right now?
Keep up the good work.
Yes. I hope we do it right. Like I said, we start getting into money, and it could be big money.
Anything else for the good of the order?
I just got word from Sarah. She says the next Green Business Morning Blend is on the 17th, and it's at the Habitat for Humanity Restore. And they'll be presenting their Green Business Certification Flag. And also, there's a big stack of these, so please take some.
Good.
You can drop them off, coffee shops, your company, wherever.
Going once, twice, three times?
At one time, Simone, I think she had asked about having a speaker from our local packaging company.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's still on people's radar. It sounded really interesting to me. It seems like we have a lot on our agenda already, but does that seem like something we still want to do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who makes the contact to bring them to us?
And what kind of time would we be offering them?
How much do they need?
Should we offer them 15 minutes, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
5 minutes?
What's the date of our next meeting?
That would be in August.
First Monday in August.
First Thursday in August is the second.
Okay.
I can contact them.
Okay. That sounds great.
Yeah. 20 minutes?
Sure. Yes.
Okay.
Please, I think it's important.
Yeah.
You have someone in mind?
No, there is a packager down by the Port of Vancouver. I can't remember who it is.
Okay.
They make packaging.
Anything else for today? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.